1 begin.
Jackalope Radio presents Movies Hate You. Movies Hate You, with your host, Rob Housechild.
And here we are. Welcome to the Movies Hate You show.
Welcome to the Movies Hate You show.
Boy, that never gets old. Well, I am the aforementioned Mr. Housechild, and the man next to me puts the man in Mandarin. Did I use that one already?
I don't know.
But I think he put the Durin in Mandarin.
Take it.
You're not the evil Mandarin. You're like just a regular Mandarin.
Yeah.
Like a regular Joe Mandarin.
Yeah.
You're not the Mandarin, like Iron Man's enemy, the Mandarin.
Some people are Cantonese. I'm a Cantonese.
Are you a Cantonese?
I'm a can-do guy.
Are you a Cantonese or a Cantonese?
That's the question, right?
That's right.
Right. Don't be a Mexican. Be a Mexican.
Right, exactly. Everyone saw that Robert Rodriguez movie. Anyway, it's the Movies Hate You show. It is a very special edition.
Really?
Of Movies Hate You. Well, not only is it this show sponsored by Wild Eye Releasing, you know, where can I go see them?
Oh, gosh, you probably go...
Google it.
WildEyeReleasing.com.
That's right.
My guess. .org.
Well, that's not why this is a special show. This is a very special show because our...
Happy birthday to you.
That's right. It's the mystery.
Happy birthday to you.
Hi.
Happy birthday, mystery! Yeah, happy birthday to you!
Was the best birthday ever.
That was pretty cool, man. Yeah, pretty good voice. I was hoping you'd whip out the guitar.
Now, do you have to pay? Do you have to pay royalties on that since you sang the happy birthday song?
I do now.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Oops, shouldn't have opened my
mouth. You do now. Mystery's birthday.
Yay!
It's amazing. Todd Sheets, our producer, thank you very much for that sing-along thing that you did.
Yes.
Are you going to share with the audience how old you are?
I'd be happy to.
Yeah.
I'd be happy to. I just left the coveted demographic group that all advertisers covet, the 18 to 49 group.
Oh.
I'm gone.
You left it.
I left it. Said goodbye. Yesterday, I was part of it. Today, not so much.
When I worked in advertising, it was 18 to 40. We weren't really interested past 40.
Hmm.
Depending on the client. You know, if you worked for, I don't know, a gold service or something, you would want that 60 to 80 demographic. But, you know, most people, Burger King doesn't want your business.
Now, are there demographics after 50? Do they consider, like, is it 50... to something, or is it 50 to death? What is it? What's the
50 and up?
Just 50 and up.
50 and up.
Yeah.
You might even say 60 and up.
Yeah. Let's
you
just
might even say 60. And up. You might say 25 to 50 might be your one. That might be your baby boomer sort of demographic, and then you might go 60 and up. We're selling, you know, Rascal wheelchairs here. You know, that kind of thing.
Might as well just put me on.
Unless
a
you're in the Midwest, then you're selling them to 22-year-olds too.
Well, life expectancy is a little different.
It's the obesity problem we have in this country. Anyway, it's your birthday, Mystery. Hey, how old are you?
50.
50
years young. 50.
I must say, you Asians age well.
We
you
do.
Don't look a day over 39.
Well, thank you.
You really don't.
I don't feel a day over 49.
I got you a birthday present.
Oh my God!
Yes.
How awesome!
Got you some goodies. I don't know if you have this.
Does this take batteries?
But I know you're a big. I know you're a big fan of Big. So I got you a big one.
It is a big one.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Should I tell the viewers what
if you want. I don't know if you have this stuff.
Well, yeah, no. We got the Bret Hart DVD, three disc collector's edition, which is fantastic. I used to have this, and I no longer have it.
Now you do.
Again,
I went and found it and bought it back for you from the pawn shop.
Oh, it's like very O. Henry-ish,
isn't it? It's O. Henry-ish, yeah. Like the candy bar.
Hmm. And we got some Jake Snake Roberts here.
Which you might already have.
Again, I had it, but I don't think I have it anymore. I think
well, if you do, you can sell it. You can go pawn it.
And a big box. A big box. Oh, God. My son Jack's going to love this. Coliseum Video.
Yeah, Coliseum.
A big box. The WWF Wrestling's Biggest, Smallest, Strangest, and Strongest.
He's got some Jesse Ventura on there, man.
Oh, yeah. Jesse. And Jesse wrestles the Polish Power Ivan Putski. You know, I was
the
in.
Best.
I was
he used to eat raw onion. He used to eat an onion like an apple. I saw him live when I was a kid.
I was in who? Putski?
Yeah.
I was in
my family was Polish. Well, they still are, but you know, there's some Polish in my family. And Putski, like John Paul the Pope and Ivan Putski II. I mean, that was really the order of heroes in my family. Mm. And that was it. Was like Ivan Putski. I went to see him live.
Wow, I had no idea. You know, I was in a store the other day, and one of the guys who was working there was saying goodbye to his coworker, and he said, "See you later, Ivan Putski." And I thought he was joking. I said, "Is that guy's name really Ivan Putski?" He said, "Yeah, it's Ivan Putski." I said, "Like the wrestler?" And he laughed. He said, "Oh, yeah, it's like the wrestler." Said,
okay. But he wasn't the wrestler.
He wasn't the wrestler.
It was like some 20-year-old.
Yeah, but his name was really Ivan Putski. I said, "Well, that's what a coincidence, because my real name is Andre the Giant." So.
But even funnier than the guy's name being Ivan Putski is that, like, his friend, as he's leaving, would call out his full name.
Mm-hmm.
Like, goodbye, Ivan. Like, goodbye, Ivan. Not goodbye, Putski. Goodbye, Ivan. It's goodbye, Ivan. Like, good night, Lee Peters. Imagine that. Every time a friend saw you, they would address your full name.
Well, you know, I worked with a woman completely bananas.
Yeah.
Completely bananas. I won't say her name.
That was the place you worked at?
No,
completely bananas?
Oh, that would be a great place. Great store name, wouldn't it?
I like that.
Just Bananas. No, I worked
with her. Just Bananas. We're bananas.
We're bananas. Going Coconuts.
Yes, we've got no bananas. That would be the name of the store.
Well, then people would not shop there. Right?
No, oh, but that's the irony of it is that they would have bananas.
Uh-huh.
And I think the young hip kids would get that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
any kind of banana you want.
Yeah.
Dipped. Fried.
Fried.
Frozen.
Plantain.
That's fried.
Yeah.
Well, you could bake those.
You could bake them.
Right, exactly. But it'd be like a banana, any way you can think of. Banana ice cream, banana yogurt, banana milkshake, banana bread.
I had a banana seat on my
a banana
my
seat. They would sell banana seats that you could eat in this. So you could actually ride the bike and then eat the seat.
I only went as far as sniffing. I never.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's the next step in sniffing the bicycle seat.
Hmm. Interesting. Anyway, I worked with this woman, and she was completely nuts for starters. But you could not call her by both names. I liked the sound of her name.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what her name is. Mary Miller. Doesn't matter. There's a million of those in the world.
Mm.
She's not listening anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I like the sound of Mary Miller. And I also worked with two Marys. So to differentiate them, mm-hmm. I would call one by her full name and the other by her full name. And she made a really big deal about it. And she took me aside privately and said, "Please don't call me Mary Miller." I said, "Well, but that's your name, though. I mean, I'm sorry. I won't if you don't want me to, but what's..." And she thought that people were making fun of her when they called her by her name.
Mm.
I don't get it. She's completely bananas. Anyway,
not be a banana. Sometimes these things have a deep psychological root. In other words, there was somebody in college. Let's just say his name was Mike. And I used to call, "Hey, Mikey, how you doing?" Just joking around. And one day he pulled me aside and he says, "Could you not do that, please?" I said, "Why? What's the big deal? I'm just joking. I'm sorry, you know." "Well, you know, my babysitter used to call me that and he molested me when I was 7 years old. So maybe there's maybe there was a nun that beat up Mary Miller and said, Mary Miller, get your butt over here. You're going to get the whip." And then the nun would give her a licking.
She's Catholic,
exactly.
So you might be honest.
Or maybe like an ex-boyfriend when he got mad at her.
Probably not an ex-boyfriend, just knowing this person.
Now, would you just call her Miss Miller? Would you?
No, yeah, it had to be Mary. Right. It had to just be Mary.
Okay.
And
Mary 1 and Mary 2. That's what I would have done.
Sure.
Not to play favorites.
The other one was fine with calling her by both names.
Well, there you go.
I don't know.
So if you're just Mary, then you're Mary Miller. But if you're Mary blah, 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 you're Mary blah, blah, blah. So there you go.
There you go. End of story.
Happy birthday.
Thank
Seriously,
you.
That's
Thank
yours.
You,
and I'll need you to
need these
burn.
Back.
No, yeah, I'll need these back
tomorrow.
I'll need these back tomorrow after the show.
Yeah.
Just put on a little.
Sure, it's just for the show.
It's a bit. It's a bit for the show. No, this one, if you could rip me a copy of this old VHS, because I have, I would like to have it. Yeah. I don't need to have the tape.
But
I
you
think
wanna,
it'll look better on
to,
your shelf.
Yeah.
But I would like a burn so I can, anytime I'm feeling I want to see some vintage Jesse Ventura, mm-hmm. go right in there.
Go right in. And there's some on here. We got Jesse versus, well, we said Ivan Putski.
Yeah, Ivan Putski, man. Come on.
Putski. King Kong Bundy. You got Gorilla Monsoon. Ken Patera. Oy vey.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Oy vey. Now, since it's your birthday, we've got even more surprises.
Really?
Even more.
More
fun. We have a guest calling in mm-hmm. a couple minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
really?
Now, last week I chastised you, mm-hmm. but you know we had our differences, and we've been talking about it all week. But you have delivered a guest to us,
and who's laughing now? Ha ha!
Well, when the guest once the guest calls and we start talking, then I will sink into my seat. I'll start eating the hat, crow, whatever. You know what I'm saying?
Who will be laughing now?
Who will be laughing last is what you should say.
Yeah.
Who's laughing now, maybe? That's what you should be saying right now as we approach the time for our esteemed guest to call in. You want to set this up?
Should I set it up? Should we?
I want to keep the listeners who are still holding on, the one or two people who haven't, you know, sat down for dinner yet and turned us off to maybe stick around. This isn't like a jackalope, like I got the guy down the street to get on the... You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is a special guest for us.
It's... I almost said it's not like 42nd Street Pete.
No,
it's not like we have him on the show.
No, 42nd Street Pete. This,
just kidding.
This is the Walking Dead guest that you've been promising us.
At long last, right?
That's right.
Well, we'll see. We should be... We're expecting a call any minute in the meantime. What's in
we
the
We have
news?
A caller.
Hey, we have All a caller.
Right. Hello.
Hello. Is this Dallas?
This is Dallas.
Dallas, it's Lee. How are you? Thanks for joining us.
I'm good. How are you? Yeah, good to talk to you.
Very good. I'm joined with my with the host of the show, Rob Housechild, sitting to my right.
How are you, Dallas?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Thanks for coming on.
Now, Dallas, we skipped the introduction, so I'm going to give it now.
Go ahead.
For those people who are listening. And even for those who are not, this is Dallas Roberts, who played Milton Mamet in season 3 of The Walking Dead. Milton was the governor's right-hand man. And man, oh man, I really thought you were going to be the hero at the end there. I think a lot of people did, that maybe you were going to take out the governor. We assume that everybody's watched the finale. We can talk about it, about the spoilers, etc. So you didn't quite make it.
The governor, I think, proved much too valuable to kill.
The sword was mightier than the pen in that case.
Absolutely.
Now, I want to also talk about now, Dallas. You've also been doing a lot of you know, not genre work necessarily for the horror fans, but stuff like, you know, you played Sam Phillips in Walk the Line. You were in 310 to Yuma. A lot of really good, solid Hollywood films. So Walking Dead's not your, you know, first time out. Doing stuff, and also there's a film that just played here in New York,
Shadow People. We can talk about that as well. Shadow People,
yeah, which is another horror project. So I want to talk about that too. I'm sure you're Walking Deaded out a little bit
for a while. There it was quite intense, but it's ebbing out nicely.
Yeah,
how hard was it keeping your mouth shut about what was going on? I mean, I assume that you knew the end of the series a few months before anybody else did. And you must have gotten asked in interviews and just on, you know, family members or whatever. I imagine that you weren't allowed to say anything. Is that true?
Yeah. Contractually, legally, I wasn't even allowed to tell my parents, you know. Like, I think legally, I couldn't even tell anyone that I was on the show until I actually appeared in the show. It was that kind of, you know, sort of secrecy. So yeah, obviously we shot the end of the season, you know, before 2013. So I've had to sit on that, you know, for 4 months now, and it's such a relief to to be able to talk about it without, you know, the fear, the constant fear that I had that I was going to give away something.
Has that happened with anybody? I mean, I know certain little tidbits have leaked out, but do you know, are you aware of anybody who was actually maybe misspoke or overspoke in an interview and got chastised for it? Or
I know, you know, I haven't. I mean, the core of The Walking Dead, you know, the people we've come to know and love, you know, they came up. This is their third year, the end of their third year on this. I think they're going back to work really soon on season four. So they're kind of old pros at, you know, at finding various ways to say, stay tuned, and it's going to be crazy. Mm-hmm. Without giving away actual sort of plot details. You know, when I realized that Milton was going to take Andrea out, you know, and there you've got like sort of lots of people asking, will the, you know, does Milton have it in him to slip on the governor, and you know, that kind of thing. It was easier to sort of avoid what was actually going to happen because no one really saw that coming.
Right. Well, at what point do you find out that Milton is no more? I mean, does somebody come to you? Do you read it in the script? How does it come about?
No, let's see what happened. When we were shooting the third to the last episode, they shut down for a little bit to retool that episode, so we had some time off. I flew back to New York from shooting in Atlanta, and while I was in New York, I got a call from Glenn Mazzara, the showrunner at the time, and he said, you're doing great, everything looks great, I just want to let you know, we're killing Milton. And, you know, when you're on a show like The Walking Dead, or The Sopranos, I would imagine, or, you know, Breaking Bad, it's not a surprise that, you know, it's not that I was, like, happy about it or that I saw it coming, but I wasn't surprised at all. And, you know, he said, you're gonna take out Andrea. And I think he called me before he called Lori. So there must have been, like, you know, 15 minutes there where I knew and she didn't. So that was difficult to keep a lid on just because, you know, Lori and I became friends over the course of shooting the season. But so I guess that's probably, you know, somewhere in September, October area that I realized that, that I'm not going to make it to season four. Mm.
And how does that play itself out when you're shooting? I mean, when you shoot your death scene, that's it, right? I mean, you wrap out of there. Is it sad? Is it, I imagine it's all kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, it was bittersweet. You know, number one, it was really, you know, it was Lori's last day. Like, it was her last scene. I happened to be there, and I happened to die during the same scene. But the major event, you know, was that Andrea was dead. And that Lori was going to leave the show, so the prison crowd showed up for that shooting day. There were, I think it spread over 2 days for her last sort of scene. And there's a tradition at the end of sort of movies or television episodes or series that when you're wrapped for the episode, or you're wrapped for the picture on a movie, or you're wrapped for the entire show, that, you know, people will stand around and say that's an episode, or, you know, in this case, that's a series wrap on Dallas Roberts. And everyone claps, and then I say, thank you very much, it's been a pleasure, etc. That happened, definitely, but then right after that, this is a series wrap on Lori Holden, and that was as charged emotionally as you would imagine, you know, something like that would be, her sort of leaving this place that she, these people that she's been with for 3 years, So it was definitely, you know, really emotionally bracing and sad in that way. And I don't mean to make light of it at all, but I was also so thrilled to get those contact lenses out of my eyes and the sticky fake blood out of my pants that I was also quite happy for it to be done.
Now, the character is not in the comic books as Milton Mamet. Is there something about the name Milton Mamet? It's a very, it's definitely a literature-based name. You've got your, you know, John Milton and your David Mamet. That's what I always think of when I hear the
name.
Is there something there in the writing, or is it just somebody trying to throw a little nod to those writers?
Yeah, I don't know whether it was Kirkman or Mazzara or, you know, one of the writers whoever sort of decided to call him Milton, and then Mamet came out. You know, I didn't know his last name was Mamet until I think it's that scene with Mr. Coleman, the sort of the guy who's going to die and we're going to watch him turn. I think that in episode 5 or 7 or something like that. Yeah, I don't know, it was never explained to me as a direct sort of allusion, but I wouldn't put anything past them over there.
Right, it could just be a little homage to those two writers, or you can try to look into it. They're both very dark writers in a sense, so maybe that's something to do with it. But what I really will miss about Milton is Milton was, to me, the character that gave scientific hope to the series, as crude as it could be, or as it was.
Yeah, totally.
No other time in 3 seasons has anyone, except for their little visit to the CDC in the first season, but that's pretty much a wash. The guy's like, yeah, we can't do anything. All right, blow the place up. You know, like there's no one's trying to even approach this in a kind of, you know, the way like in Day of the Dead, where, you know, the doctor's crazy, but he's trying to figure stuff out. How do these things work? Like how, you know, so I'll miss that. And I don't know if there'll be another character who's trying to look at the deeper kind of like, what can we do? Not emotionally, what can we do with these creatures? Not like, let's not kill them like Herschel did, but more scientific.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll miss that in Milton's character. And I wish it was actually explored a little bit more.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Lord knows what they're going to do with season 4. I think Milton had that great little pocket there in Woodbury where there were guards on the walls and, you know, the water was flowing and the electricity was up with the solar panels where he could actually devote time to that. You have to stop running in order to be able to sort of, you know, have the time to sit down and think and research and do that sort of thing. So, that's definitely a part of the show that I'll miss as well, you know. But I imagine, you know, with the CDC and with Milton this year, and they're going to have to keep sort of wondering what's brought this about and how we can change it. So I would imagine they'll slip some other way to think about it scientifically and again.
Which will be really great because then the zombies just aren't kind of like, okay, it's zombie time in the show. You know, we're not doing drama right now. Let's do a little action and then back to... I kind of like the let's sit down and try to figure this out and somebody having the actual time and resources to try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
Is there something in Mil... I kept thinking to myself during your end scene with Andrea that... There, you would say to her like, I'm going to try not to come back, or I'm going to try to come back. You know, like you were trying to do to the elderly gentleman who was dying, you know, on your table, so to speak, earlier in the season. Like you were going to really fight mentally to not turn or to turn less or something. Like you were going to try to apply your own scientific leanings.
It reminded me of Roger in Dawn of the Dead.
Right,
the character Roger, he says, right. "I'm going to try not to come back.
Exactly. But the disease is just, you know, just is what it is.
Yeah, I think I think Milton's sort of his mind is so sort of clinical and so not necessarily emotional. You know, that I think he's succumbing as slowly as he can to the death that he's going to experience. Sort of, you know, the first death. But I think he just knows that, you know, like, it's interesting. We also wrestled with that in terms of his approach to Andrea, you know, whether that was a curious, you know, I tried to play it more sort of like a fawn, you know, a deer sort of standing up for the first time, and sort of not, it wasn't really vicious until it got really, you know, quite close, when I could smell the sort of, you know, it's like the babe to the teat, as it were.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, I think it's, it's also, you know, there's no real clear, timeline on how long it takes them to turn, after they've been bitten or before they've been bitten. So it still did, it felt like making it up on the fly even then.
Mm-hmm. Now, how much of a backstory were you given for Milton? Did you come up with it on your own? I mean, was he a scientist before this happened? It seemed more like a hobby to me, like he was just interested in science.
Yeah, I was given zero backstory whatsoever. You know, I think the first time you see Milton, it's like light a match, bubble a beaker, and he takes off his safety glasses. And I thought, okay, he's a scientist, you know, like, and then the director of that episode was like, no, I don't think he's a scientist. I think he's like he's just trying real hard. He's like reading up. He's like a smart guy who's attempting science. And I was like, okay. And then the director of the second episode was like, no, he's definitely a scientist. And the director of the third episode was like, no, he's totally not a scientist. So, you know, I was sort of painting the picture with the sort of colors available, and I'd learned, you know, doing long form storytelling like television, where you don't know the end, you don't even know what's going to happen next, that if I do sort of my own work and make up my own backstory, and then they'll just write something different two episodes later, and then I have to change my mind. So I just, you know, sort of went with like zero backstory until they gave me just a little bit. I was like, oh, he telecommuted, you know, like he didn't really interact with humans too much, and did that sort of thing. I just picked it up piece by piece the way the audience did.
Mm-hmm. But it's interesting, in a post-apocalyptic situation, you can reinvent yourself, and that's what the governor does. He's not a military leader in his previous life, but he's assumed this role. And so as Milton, he's kind of assumed this role. Maybe it's something he's always wanted to do, you know, whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, you can, you know, reinvent yourself. And in fact, I think you have to reinvent yourself quite quickly or you will die. Certainly a guy like Milton, if he had not sort of, you know, been in close proximity to the governor and then proven useful, you know, Merle would have taken him out back and, you know, kicked his head around just for fun.
Right. Merle would have fed him to the zombies.
Yeah, exactly.
What's your experience, or do you have experience with the fan community? Because the Walking Dead fans are just crazy for this show and for the comics, etc. I don't know if this is 100% true, but there was a rumor that Lori Holden received a death threat because of the episode where she accidentally shot Daryl.
Yeah.
Because Daryl is so beloved.
I heard that too.
Have you gotten any like craziness or on the other opposite end of the spectrum? I mean, how did people
react when you're walking down the street? Yeah. You know, you get stopped or...
Yeah, you know, there's no one who, like, is kind of into The Walking Dead. Like, everyone who's into The Walking Dead is in it, like, 187%. I don't look a whole lot like Milton anymore. I tend to wear a beard around the streets, and so you have to be kind of eagle-eyed to spot me. But, you know, to a man or woman, every person who has seen past this sort of facial hair into, you know, and recognized me has been just really overjoyed about the experience of you know, the show, and really sort of positive, and that's been, you know, a remarkable thing to experience. You know, Daryl, that whole sort of character, you know, like, I have no doubt that someone, you know, you know, threatened Laurie's life or something, however serious that might have been. Mm-hmm. Over Daryl, people are not going to let that character go easily. I mean, if they ever decide to take him out, you know, I would expect there's going to be some rioting going on.
Right. My understanding is that they attempted to, or at least it was planned. Maybe they even got so far as shooting a sequence, the scene where Daryl, I believe it was when Dale died in season two, towards the end of season two, that he comes upon a couple of zombies feasting on a cow, and originally that was supposed to be Daryl that they were feasting on. I don't know.
Oh, wow.
If there's any truth to that, there's a little truth to it, if it was planned and not shot, or what.
Yeah, I haven't heard any of that, you know, and just the sort of, you know, rampant sort of the popularity of him and the character. And I mean, he's pimping, you know, the show on commercials now. You know, he's sort of an icon of the brand. So yeah, I don't think he's got to worry too much about going out soon.
Yeah, even more so than Rick. Like, you know, you don't identify the show with, oh, it's Rick. You identify it kind of with, like, the, you know, the Michonnes and the Daryls and the kind of the characters that aren't set up as the lead character.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. It's interesting. And Rick's not out there pimping it the same way either. Mm-hmm. You know, like, they're, people aren't using him in that way.
Speaking of pimping, there's a lot of... Do you ever do the horror conventions, or have you ever there's a lot of Walking Dead cast members now who are doing, like, the convention circuit, you know, autograph conventions? And
yeah, I haven't stumbled on that at all. You know, it'll be interesting to see sort of the reaction now, because I don't think anyone's recognized me. In fact, I had to, the last people who recognized me, it was like 4 days ago. And I was standing up from dinner with my family, and they were sitting at the table next to me, and they said, hey, we just wanted to say we get together and we watch The Walking Dead, and it's just been a great year, and thanks so much. And I was like, thank you very much. And I sort of shook their hands, and then they said, now don't tell us anything, because we're just about to watch the finale.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, God, thank God, you know, you didn't give me any more time to talk, because I probably would have spoiled it.
Yeah. Are you going to miss me? Yeah, you start off the conversation. Yeah. Are you guys going to miss me?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. So it'll be interesting to see sort of what the reaction is to Milton, you know, because he'll sort of fade into the sort of lore of Walking Dead, you know, and it'll be interesting to see what his popularity, how that, you know, rides itself out.
Mm-hmm. I think Milton became quickly popular. You know, I'm not, you know, like, not Daryl, like, obsessions, but I mean, very, very strong character. And also, the governor needed Milton from a thematic point of view as well. It wouldn't have been the same if it was just the governor wanting to commit war. You were kind of the yin to his yang in a way, you know what I mean? It was like a little bit of a balance there of the mind and the body, the mind and the brawn and the
head. It'll be interesting to see, you know, where they go. I mean, certainly if you're a fan of the comics, you know, the governor shows up in the comics already so far gone in terms of, like, the id is in entire control. And they did I thought they did a cool thing, you know, sort of taking us from a relatively, you know, stable human who's obviously got some issues with the daughter and the fish tanks.
Yeah.
And watching him slowly sort of twist further and further and further and further. And, you know, season four, you know, I have honestly no idea what's going to happen, but I can imagine that now it's going to start to feel like more of a sort of comic book governor, you know. He's out there, who knows where he is, but he's out there with Martinez and the Bowman, I think, still, right? And
right.
And who knows what that's going to turn into.
And whoever else they pick up along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
I also like the scene between Milton and Herschel. I thought there was something there, and I thought they were setting up a Milton eventually going over to the other side type thing. You know, I think Herschel saw, hey, this guy is pretty deep and intelligent, and we could really use him. And what is he doing with these crazy gun freaks over here in Woodbury?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, that was such a beautiful scene to play. We had a really good time shooting that sequence because it did feel sort of like, you know, Herschel was the first person to really actively, like, take any interest in Milton other than what they could get him to do for them. You know, Andrea's constantly using Milton to get to the governor, and the governor is using Milton for his sort of purposes, but Herschel was the first guy to go like, what do you mean you're recording this? Can I read that? Like, to show some sort of interest. And so that was, you know, a really sort of interesting break to take from the walking deadness of it all, and just have two guys, you know, sort of like standing on opposite line sides of the dividing line, but going like, I know you, you know, we could hang out if these crazy people would stop, you know, pointing guns at each other.
And simultaneously, they're doing that with Daryl and the governor's general as well. They're having their little moment where, oh, we both kick zombie butt. We could be doing this together and not fight each other. Yeah. But I, you know, the best part of that scene for me is when you ask Herschel, besides the little gun bit, that was funny, where he says you have to buy me a drink first. But that curiosity,
right.
can I see your wound? It almost, to me, that pulled back the whole curtain of, this guy is not a scientist at all. Mm-hmm. Like, he never went to med school. There's nothing. Like, he's just obsessed with this kind of, like, it's almost like this childlike curiosity, and you're kind of just watching this whole world unfold, and you're just caught up in it.
Yeah, you know, I found, you know, I think Milton, he's so, he's childlike is very, you know, I like that. He's so unaware of the social conventions against saying to someone who's lost their limb, like, can I see it? You know, like, that's something a 5-year-old would say without knowledge that's uncomfortable socially. And Milton just didn't come equipped with those those radars, you know. And I quite liked that he was like, you were bit and you took that off and you're still living. You know, I have to know everything I can about that. And that overrode any sort of, you know, he just doesn't have the tuning fork that would tune in the frequency that would be an uncomfortable thing to ask someone.
Right. And I think it also shows that someone should be documenting this, you know. There's no one writing down this history,
mm-hmm.
you know, of all this
that's happened. Well, and that was, you know, that Woodbury's, you know, hope was that the new sort of civilization would arise from that pocket and other pockets like it, and being able to sort of join up with people who had managed to do the same thing and try and rebuild civilization in some way. And, you know, to have documents of that, you know, that's how you sort of would do it, I guess. I mean, yeah, I hope somewhere the governor swung back by Woodbury to pick up Milton's journals. I'm sure he didn't. I'm totally sure he didn't.
Or maybe Rick grabbed him and threw him in the bus, you know, before they drove.
There you go, exactly.
How much of a backstory of Woodbury is there? I mean, do you know how it started, how many people started? Is that something that's discussed, or is it...
No, there was just a little bit of, again, like, you know, it's not like anyone ever sat me down and said, hey, listen, this is this, this is this, this is this. I got it just the way the viewers got it, just by the script. So there's a scene early on in Woodbury where the governor's standing at the sort of town hall steps, and he says, I remember that first night, it was eight of us holed up in a room with some saltine crackers, and that's really, that's it. And he goes, and now it's all this, you know, and there is lemonade and, you know, a band playing and that sort of thing. So that was really the only thread that I had to connect, is that I probably was one of those eight people on that first night, and that slowly we had taken in more people and taken over more square footage and subsequently acreage, and managed to build walls and create that town. But honestly, that was all that that I could piece out from the script, because there certainly wasn't any, you know, sort of Bible about you know, the creation of Woodbury.
Do you find that frees you up in ways, or which would you prefer, that there's a backstory and every little detail is there for you, or would you rather have the ambiguity of it?
I think I would prefer to know everything, but you kind of give that over when you make television, because they're making it up on the fly. You know, it's very, I don't even think there is a show. There might be, I might be wrong, but it tends to be being written, you know, six or seven episodes ahead of what you're shooting. So, you know, for whatever reason, you know, I just don't do it. I don't write for television or anything. You know, it would have seemed to me like you would just write all 13 and then you'd start shooting them, and then you could tell people, like, okay, this is going to happen, this is going to happen, then this is going to happen, and then as an actor, you'd be able to sort of smooth those transitions up and down toward the goal, you know, like you do when you're doing a play or a movie. You know what the beginning and the middle and the end is. But in television, especially, you know, like, Milton lasted a season, but for guys like, you know, Rick and those guys, like, they're going into season four, and this show might go to season 16, mm-hmm. you know, so there's just going to be ambiguity. You're not going to know what you're doing in season seven when you're in season four, you know, so that you just, it's part of the territory, that ambiguity.
Right. Now, is that because they're taking their cues from the viewer reaction, or I mean, are they doing like constant market research on who's a popular character, who isn't? Is that part of it, or is it something else?
You know, I don't know. I don't know. You know, I think, you know, that it could be, again, like, this is how little they shared with me, just as an entity in their program. Like, I wasn't in the second to the last episode of season three, mm-hmm. and that's the episode where Merle turns and is killed by, and I wasn't in that episode, so I didn't get that script. So I showed up to shoot the last episode and saw on the makeup, in the makeup trailer on the wall, a picture of Merle as a walker. And I was like, what's that? And they were like, oh, you didn't hear? Merle's dead. I was like, what?
What?
So, yeah, so that, if they're not telling me that kind of thing, then they're certainly not telling me how they're running focus groups to determine the sort of direction of the show.
Now, let me pause for a second. You're listening to the Movies Hate You Show, and with us tonight is a special guest, Dallas Roberts from The Walking Dead. You know him as Milton Mamet, the governor's right-hand man, former right-hand man.
Yes.
Did they make you read the comics? Did you have to read all the trade paperbacks before you started the show, or was that optional?
No, they didn't. They didn't make me. No, I did. I read most of the comics when I was shooting another show for AMC called Rubicon. My character in that was into comic books, and so I picked up The Walking Dead as part of my sort of, you know, reading comic books vibe. And so I had read up to, I think, issue 70 by the time, you know, by the time The Walking Dead came on the air. Continued to, you know, like I, while shooting this season, you know, got in a car in torrential rain and drove to the local comic store in, you know, Dunwoody, Georgia, and bought episode 100, the sort of, you know, foil version, limited edition of episode, or you know, issue 100 of The Walking Dead. So I was quite familiar with, you know, with the governor and many things after that. I mean, they've barely sort of scratched the surface in terms of how far they've gone in the comics versus how far they've gone in the TV show. And there were some, I know, like Laurie didn't read the comics at all because she didn't want to, you know, she just wanted to play the thing that she knew, which was the scripts that were coming in. So there were, you know, people who fell on either side of that line, cast members who would read it and cast members who wouldn't.
Hmm. Right. Before we run out of time,
we promised to not inundate him with Walking Dead questions.
Enough
we
walking.
Spent the whole show about The Walking Dead. He's tired of The Walking Dead.
That's right. So two more questions about Walking Dead.
No.
I do want to mention... Shadow People, this movie that I dug a lot. It's a new movie. It's available now from Anchor Bay on DVD, Blu-ray, VOD, I believe.
Mm-hmm. It's on cable, yeah.
On cable. The film's called Shadow People, and Dallas, you play the lead character who is a radio talk show, talk radio host, who is a little bit in the Art Bell, George Noory vein. He's a sort of a paranormal and not investigator necessarily, but he does a radio show. The story is about the shadowy figures that everybody sees out of the corners of their eye, and what if they're real, right? Is that a good explanation?
Yeah, I mean it's a phenomenon that's been I'm going to say mythologized, but I don't mean that to sound like it's a myth. You know, it's not a myth like sort of Norse gods. It's like it's a mythology that has been shared by many cultures over many hundreds of years, of these three different figures. There's a, you know, tall sort of skinny one and an old sort of stooped one and a woman. And that they there are in some cultures, you know, today even there's some real you know, credence lent to that experience. You know, people talk about sleep paralysis, and then these creatures or beings, I don't know, you know, sort of what you would refer to them, but as, you know, sort of approaching them, and that's not always something that's, you know, a pleasant experience.
It's like a night terror? Is it like a night terror? Is it the same, or is it different from night terrors?
I think it's all kind of the same.
Mixed in, right.
Yeah, it's the same idea, except you're awake and paralyzed, like you can't move your body, and you're seeing something, you know, approaching you, and that's, you know, as soon as you start to sort of Google the shadow people, or there's many different names for them for different cultures, and, you know, that we show it in the film as well. There's old, you know, there's, you know, great old sort of engravings of like a woman asleep and a sort of, you know, demon or the dark figure sort of sitting on her chest, you know, the nightmare. So, you know, Charlie Crow, who's the name of the radio personality I play in the movie, he's sort of confronted with this, the idea of these things, and sort of dismisses it, and then learns more and more about it as people around him begin to perish. and is drawn in, you know, to the story that way.
Now, the interesting technique used in the film is this is based on a true story,
mm-hmm.
and the director Matt Arnold uses some of the original footage, like footage from the deposition of the guy, the actual talk show host, and actual phone calls, which are really creepy. And to me, that made the movie like 100 times creepier. I can see people being taken out of the movie by that. For me, it worked perfectly.
Well, I think in the way we kind of experience things these days, you know, going on YouTube and looking at those kind of clips, I think it's going to be more natural to see that happening in films, and it's not going to, you know, to maybe a younger viewer, that might mean, that's like, oh, okay, yeah, they put a YouTube clip in there. That's mm-hmm. how their mind's interpreting that.
Now, did you shoot this before Walking Dead or during? Or?
Yeah, no, I shot this. Gosh, when was that? I guess it's a couple of years now. It took them a while to finish, to do all the post on it, and then they went, I think they sold it in Cannes, maybe, if not the last one, then the one before that. So yeah, it's been, I guess that was like 2, maybe 3 years ago that we put that in the can.
Well, I totally recommend it.
Shadow People.
It's a scary, it's creepy.
Yeah.
Dallas gives a great performance.
Searching on your VOD on mm-hmm. your cable system, or grab it on Netflix.
There you go.
What are you working on now, Dallas, that now people can't follow you on Walking Dead? Where can they follow you? What's this new TV show that you're going to be on?
I'm going to pop up every now and again on The Good Wife, as I have for a number of years. So I'll keep doing that. And then there's this show called Unforgettable that's going into its second season this summer. I think it starts airing in July. And I am just about to, well, I'm actually just about to go follow my lady halfway across the world to, you know, watch our kids while she goes to work in Scotland, and then I'll fly back and begin shooting Unforgettable in June. So I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be, you know, CBS this summer.
Nice. Yeah, that was a little bit of a spoiler because it wasn't Dallas signed to it, and it came out.
I think Variety maybe leaked or published that you had been signed to the show. So naturally, and that was about 2 or 3 episodes before the end of the season.
Right.
So people were saying, "Oh, does this mean that?"
Yeah, fans Milton's were speculating
gone?
That you were going to get killed off.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was, and still is. You know, there is language in my contract that allows for me to return to The Walking Dead. I think. And they did that primarily so that they could say, this is not a spoiler. There's language that says he can do both shows. You know, I don't think anyone needs to see sort of the governor flashing back to Milton in a white dress or anything. So I would imagine that, that I'm basically
Merle,
off.
I've got the season 4 opener right now. The governor is having a nightmare. He's being stabbed by Milton, and he wakes up in a cold sweat. That's it.
I love it.
And when are they planning on killing you off on the new show? Any idea? Can you tell us that?
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure they'll give me a call, and then I'll have to keep it secret for months, and then, we'll start again.
Of course.
I have a feeling The Good Wife doesn't have the same kind of fan base as The Walking Dead. I call me crazy.
The people who love The Good Wife love The Good Wife just as hard as the people who love The Walking Dead.
Yes, you're right.
I tend to get that,
I know it's very popular.
Well, you're the brother. You're the brother.
Right,
that's
right.
That's what I get sort of on the street with that. So that's fun. But, yeah, you know, like, I don't think, Owen, the character I play in The Good Wife, he doesn't have to worry about dying all the time.
Right.
But horror fans are just a breed apart. I mean, they're so passionate. I mean, you don't have Friends conventions, you don't have Cheers conventions, but you have, you know, you could have a Walking Dead convention.
Right.
Yeah, I saw, everyone's going to think I'm not a proper nerd. I'm just blanking right now. Evil Dead.
Mm-hmm.
What's his name?
Bruce
Sam Raimi. Bruce Campbell,
right? Yeah, I saw him at Comic-Con, and that was like the Beatles, man. I had never seen anything like that. You know, that's, I would agree. Like, that level of sort of fandom, people, you don't get that anywhere else, for sure.
And have you seen the new Evil Dead, the remake?
I haven't. When I saw him at the thing, they had played like a sneak clip of it. Like a couple of minutes of it. You know, I have such affection for that series of movies from my childhood. I'm going to be one of those, you know, sort of old stodgy curmudgeons and like, begrudgingly watch it, in a little while.
Well, if you do, stay through the end credits. I won't give you a spoiler, but there's...
Oh, nice. I like it.
Yep.
Oh, Bruce shows up.
I'm not going to say a word.
All right.
I'm contractually obligated to not say anything about it.
Mr. Producer, where are we at with time?
Hey, we're about there. We got about 2 minutes left, guys.
Oh, my goodness. How many more Walking Dead questions can we get out in 2 minutes?
At least 8.
I was thinking 9.
No.
Nah, let's let them go.
Yes, no, the governor, Michonne, takes it, and they finally are rescued by a hot air balloon.
I love it.
That's the answers to any questions you want to throw in there.
Nice. I was hoping Milton was going to cure the disease, but that's not going to happen. Thanks anyway, Dallas.
No. Yeah, I tried.
It's been great having you on. We really appreciate it. And
really cheers. Like thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Oh, anytime. You're welcome back to talk about new projects or just to reminisce.
Yeah. Awesome. I like it a lot.
Cool, man.
Great. Thanks so much, Dallas.
Cheers. Have a good one, guys.
All right. Take care. Thank you.
Peace.
Right,
all right, Dallas Roberts from Walking Dead.
Fantastic,
wow,
huh?
Mr. Right. Ree, I owe you a drink.
Rob, he's eating a big old bowl of crow.
Big bowl of crow, man. I doubted your skills, man. Well, and Dallas was awesome.
He was fantastic.
Wow, he's a fantastic guy, man. What a nice guy.
Lot.
Yeah, cool. All right, I think that wraps it up for us this week.
Dang it.
This has been the Movies Hate You Show. Get us at movieshateyou@gmail.com. Hopefully this show will be in the archives very soon so Walking Dead fans can get to it.
That's
Todd,
right.
Get on that.
You got it.
Thank you for producing, sir. Mr. Ree Lee Peterson, thank you for delivering that guest you promised, keeping your word.
The pleasure was all mine.
And happy birthday once again to you.
That's
what a
nice
gift to yourself tonight was.
Wait till next year.
Wait till next year. Wait till next week. We'll see you then.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
She's so cold to me, always in trouble, never know why. She has two sides, changes her mind, and I just wanna get off this ride. Step aside, let the storm pass me by. Good, it's great, and we lay side by side. She curls up in my arms, everything is alright. Don't wanna kill these good vibes, still it happens all the time. There's no reason. No matter what I try, I get denied. It happens all the time. It's a roller coaster ride, thrills and spills so sky high. I'm so glad she's mine.